Hey, everybody. Welcome to another week of the Soccer Thread Podcast. I am Dan Schrader. I'm in Portland, Oregon, sitting at a new desk at which I will be standing for a substantial part of this week because it's a sit stand. That is how serious my work from home has gotten. I am high on ergo is what I am. And this is the final piece to my puzzle and I'm so excited. So that'll give you a little view. Colin Smith is in swampy Massachusetts.
I'm in Swampscott in a shed, which is also where I work. My desk is a piece of plywood that I've nailed to the wall, screwed to the wall. Let's be real. I'm not using nails. I'm not in some kind of fucking amateur. But yeah,
my ergo game.
Yeah, I'm not a caveman. But my ergo game is low. Just gotta stand up and stretch every once in a while.
That's the real key. But when you don't get stretch breaks, you need all the other little tricks. Mm-hmm. Mike in Minneapolis, how's your ergo?
It's awful. I don't know if I've talked about this on the pod, but I've been hunting for a house for some time now. And so, you know, my thought was, why invest in, you know, ergo stuff in my current apartment when I'm just going to be out of here soon? Just more stuff to move. I don't want to do that.
It's true.
And,
that's true.
You know, 6 months later, the hunt continues with no end in sight. So my ergo is bad and I'm not trying to fix it.
I think laptop on a couch is the first thing they tell you. It's terrible.
Oh, yeah. Well, not just a lot. Not just a couch, but a deep couch where you have to slump a little bit. Yeah. So it's no good.
I hope you've at least got a cushion between you and the computer.
Let me do that. Let me put a cushion cushion behind. This is actually helping. Thank you, Daniel.
See, this is what I bring.
I feel pressure now to we've just been told by the teacher to like sit up straight.
Yeah.
My back will thank you in 40 years.
I know better than this.
I do not bring the hottest takes to the thread, but I keep everybody healthy so that the ones with the hottest takes can keep coming back every week. That's my role.
You're more of a pass to the pass to the pass guy, you know?
Yeah. I'm a Nagby.
The guy who passes it to Nagby.
I will take that. I would be happy to be the guy that passes it to the guy that passes it to the guy that passes it to the guy that scores. That's the fundamental. Mike, we got some emails. Are we going to do emails first or are we going to do the emails first? Well, maybe Mike's emails first. Mike's emails.
We'll do the listener emails.
Right.
So our first email is from Cliff. Cliff just forwarded us an email about Blazeball. Do we want to talk about Blazeball? I mean,
I'd rather talk about how
we get a lot of emails this week, which is why this is getting brought up.
I love that Cliff just forwards us emails with absolutely no context, no comment. It's just straightforwarded.
Yeah.
It is just a slight variation on the text message that has a tweet in it with no comment. it's just the same thing.
Yeah.
So Cliff's been all in on this Blazeball thing. I have not clicked a single link of it. I don't know what's going on. I don't understand it. That there are names and teams and that's, I have no idea what any of this is about.
Yeah. It's fake baseball on the internet. That's about it, where my understanding ends.
And it's like controlled by fans. Like the fans somehow like get to vote on the rules or something. Or like, I mean, I have no idea what the rules are, but they're similar to baseball, but can be edited, I think. All I know is that at the end of this email that Cliff forwarded us, it said, "We are all Wyatt Mason." And I didn't go back to read who Wyatt Mason was or why we would all be him.
Wyatt Mason, we stand with you. We hope. We think?
We hope.
Maybe. We don't know what you've done, Wyatt.
Wyatt Mason is a great baseball name, though. That person is not playing any sport besides baseball.
That is absolutely true. Born baseball player, for sure. Thanks, Cliff. Yeah, solid email there. Next email from Rudy. This is a short one from him. He says, Two things. First, great pun last time with the movies and the dogs. I'm so impressed. So as Spanish-speaking dogs would say slash bark, gua, I think.
Wow. Wow. Gua, gua. Okay.
Then he says hashtag wow factor, hashtag classic trilingual puns. That makes a lot more sense. Guau as a pun.
Yeah, guau factor, then, baby.
Yeah. Okay. Good one, Rudy. Always can count on Rudy for a pun. Man, this is an interesting email section. And then he also gave a happy belated birthday to my wife. Apologies for not doing it sooner, he says. I hope she has a magnificent day. There we go. That's the Rudy we love.
So good.
I don't know if either of these really require any reaction or commentary, but I'll just pause, and if you guys want to jump in with your own puns or just, you know, commentary, we can do that. We certainly have plenty of time.
I just like to complain that none of the listeners have wished my wife a 5-year wedding anniversary happy anniversary. But, you know, none of the listeners did that either. That was yesterday.
Wow. Disgusting.
Also could have wished a 5 years anniversary of the shrimp boil of love, which was the night before our wedding, in which
the eve
in which Dan led the rest of the thread in boiling up 100 pounds of shrimp, just piles of shrimp on tables at the end of that, like you've never seen. One of the most beautiful sights in my life.
I think I may have scarred your mother-in-law, but I'm excited to get to boil for her again and maybe make it up to her.
Let's do it. Let's
do
it.
Nothing says we're about to do a Jewish wedding the next day than a big old shrimp boil.
I mean, the story I like about that one is that, the shrimp boil is normally done outside. We had to do it inside in that case. But that the shrimp was so thick in the air that there was a person who came to the event who has a slight seafood allergy, who could not come in the door because they stopped being able to breathe, because that's what the air was like in there. If you breathe the air, you were no longer vegan. Like, it was just, that's just a beautiful thing to me.
Wow. Wow. Rudy signs off with kind Guatemalan regards, which I'm pretty sure are my favorite kind of regards. They're certainly better than best or warmest.
Yeah. CGRs, baby. CGRs or KGRs.
I love a kind Guatemalan regard.
Love it.
Yeah, soccerthread@gmail.com. Next few weeks could be a little barren, so, you know, come in hot with the emails.
I mean, we'll have all sorts of transfer rumors. Palmer will have a heyday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just send us your worst transfer rumors.
Yeah.
Just make them up. Make them mostly about Harry Kane or Hugo Lloris.
Yeah.
Palmer won't know the difference.
Your Blaiseball transfer rumors also.
Yeah. Name people from Blaiseball and say they're going to Spurs for $45 million.
Wyatt Mason going from the Los Angeles, I think the Los Angeles Tacos, maybe? That might be a team. I don't know, Cliff. Sorry.
The Philly Pies.
Philly Pies.
So we had some other emails sent to the Soccer Thread this week. They were from us. We did a series of predictions for the Champions League final. In order to hide them in the ballot box, we just sent them to the super secret Thread email account that none of us ever actually log into. So they were hidden there. Colin
so
just
secret,
logged in.
It requires 2-step authentication.
By two people.
By they're two like different people on the thread, yeah.
They're like nuclear codes. One person can't do it by themselves.
Yep. You have to have the two keys across the room.
Colin, take us away. Let's talk about what we thought was going to happen in this Champions League final.
Yeah. So I set this up in the middle of the week, and I asked you guys to do this. And I said, you know, go nuts with these predictions. Like, that's the point of it. Don't give me cold takes. So, you know, the game didn't give us a lot of hot. But hopefully some of these predictions were right anyway. All right, I'm going to go in the order that the predictions came into the super secret email account. So I, you know, predictably, as I made this game, also emailed first. I said the winner of the game would be Bayern. So I got that correct. 1 point for me.
Ooh, cold take.
The score, I predicted Bayern 4-0. So they didn't quite live up to that. Man of the match, I said Serge Gnabry, former Arsenal player. We'll get onto that. Not exactly correct.
Definitely had the best facial hair of the match. I will go out not on a limb at all and say that, like, a timeless mustache.
It is. Yeah, like, he could be on Miami Vice, I think.
Absolutely.
It's just beautiful. Beautiful look.
Then the next category I gave you guys was scapegoat of the match. So, you know, the player on the losing team that they're all blaming for losing. I said Neymar, because Alphonso Davies is going to score more goals than him. Which wasn't not true. I mean, they scored the same amount of goals.
I mean, it is not true.
Right, it's not true. Okay, it's not true. It's not completely wrong. They scored the same amount of goals. Bold prediction, PSG gets a player sent off in the first half. Did not happen. They didn't even get a card in the first half. So, you know, Bayern lived up to my expectations there. Maybe PSG not as shit as I was hoping.
Sorry, who's your scapegoat again?
Neymar.
Oh, yeah. A classic pick.
I mean, for me, yeah. All right, Mike Samuelson, winner, Bayern. Score, 4-3 after extra time.
Let's go.
Wow. He really, wanted goals.
Really predicting with your heart there. Man of the match, Mbappe with a hat trick in a losing effort. Not true.
If things had been a little different, it might have all turned out my way.
Just a touch different.
Scapegoat of the match, Wenger for letting Gnabry go. Also Neymar. So
I mean, that actually may be right. I spent a significant amount of this match wondering, like, how did Gnabry end up, like, being one of the better players in a Champions League final? And also, like, there was a point at which I thought Di Maria and Ozil were basically the same player. And now what happened to those two players? Like, just divergent paths.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this game I spent thinking about how the Premier League, I mean, maybe we'll talk about it, but
yes,
there
were
Premier
League
connections, which, like, so anyway, yeah, Arsenal, a big loser in this match. I think we can agree.
Love it. Which means we're all winners.
I'm giving you points.
I love this bold prediction from Mike because it is so specific. bold prediction. Herrera and Mueller get in a slap fight and are both red carded in the 79th with the game tied 2-2. The game goes into extra time tied at 2-2 and then opens up with Mbappe, Davies, Neymar, and Gnabry running track meets. No, none
That's
of that
bold.
Happened.
That is a bold prediction.
Like, in the 79th.
If there's
2-2.
Two guys who are going to get in a slap fight, it's going to be Mueller and Herrera. There was a moment in the second half. It was earlier than the 79th. But where Neymar, you know, he was mostly on his best behavior today, but there was one time where he kind of did his little, you know, get fouled and roll around, and there was a kerfuffle, and I just thought, let's get to slapping, boys.
Pereira came in.
Get out your purses Pereira, and let's get to slapping. All right, pretty good. That was a pretty good bold prediction, though.
Yeah.
Palmer thought he was going to be at this pod, so he did make predictions. He didn't make it because of, I think the hike went a little long, but... he had PSG winning this 2-1. So first one who'd picked PSG so far, man of the match, Mbappe, scapegoat of the match, all of Bayern's attacking prowess. Gnabry is the scapegoat, with Mueller and Lewandowski. Could not be, more wrong. His bold prediction, somehow, some way there will be a streaker. There's always a streaker in the Champions League.
That's a great prediction.
I mean, it happened earlier this year, I think in the Spanish league, right? In a closed stadium,
really?
There was a streaker. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So this is kind of related to that. Not really, actually, at all. But I just thought about how cool it would be to be the ball boys at this game. I mean, it'd be really cool to be a ball boy at a Champions League final. But to be one of the five people who is not a player, staff, or referee who's there would be a pretty sweet story.
Pretty awesome. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
It'd be like, you hear about this 1992, like, USA Dream Team practices being like the best basketball games of all time. It's like, there were 10 people in the gym, you know?
Yeah.
This is the same thing.
That guy in The Last Dance that, like, hid in the rafters to watch the Blazers or the Bulls practice when they were in the finals against the Blazers.
All right, Dan's predictions, PSG 2-1 as well. Sorry, Dan.
Old I needed, guys. I mean... if I'm telling you the truth, I actually bet on Bayern to win. But for the sake of the pod, I had to take PSG because I knew you guys were taking Bayern.
Appreciate you being honest with us, Dan.
The man of the match.
I want to be honest.
Di Maria, scapegoat of the match, Boateng. Bold prediction. Both teams give up one goal that looks like calamitous, terrible defending.
So I thought that was based on something, that prediction. Both these teams like to play a high line, and they like to play out of the back of that high line, which just leaves so much space if you make a silly turnover. And it happened a few times in this game. There were no goals that came out of it, but there were some points where like they just gave the ball away 45 yards from goal with nobody back, right? Yeah. Neuer stepped out a few times and just cut it off, as he does. But just want to be clear. There was something behind that prediction.
Yeah.
And both of these teams have players that can kill you for that, right? So it's the combination of those two things. I thought both ways it was possible that the goals were going to look really bad, but it was going to be driven by the systems.
Yeah.
I sure thought there'd be more goals in this one. I mean, I think I predicted that Bayern was going to blow them out, but still I was the only one who predicted a clean sheet on either side. You know, Mike predicting 4-3 and you guys predicting 2-1. We all thought there were goals in this, but there really weren't. So that was definitely a surprise.
10 years of predicting tournament knockout game score lines with you guys. always subtract at least one goal from each team from what you think it's going to be.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's fair.
I should have predicted 3-1.
Exactly. Colin, you thought it was going to be a blowout. It was not really.
No.
Do you think it played like a blowout? Like, did the score reflect the balance of the game?
I didn't watch this game. I didn't get a chance to watch this whole game. Sorry.
Mike?
I mean, Bayern were definitely the better team, but both teams created a lot of good chances. I mean, Dan, you and me were texting during the game that, like, Neuer and Navas were maybe the two best players on the field, which kind of gets to, like, why it was a 1-0 game, because I mean, there were plenty of chances out there. PSG, I feel like in the first half, like Mbappe and Di Maria both had a couple good chances each, which Neuer saved, or in one case, like Di Maria just blasted over. But especially the first half was like a really fun game of soccer, of just really great players playing at a high level. Everyone's trying to attack. I don't know. Finals. Don't often see a lot of goals, but this was not a dull game by any means, even though it was only 1-0.
Yeah, I agree. It was two high quality teams, obviously high quality. I mean, massive investment in both of them, but they wanted to try to go and score, right? Like, regular listeners to this show will know that the tiki-taka and the Barcelona and like playing keep away for the sake of defense is not really what interests me. And these teams, even at the end, we're not trying to do that, right? Like, Bayern weren't just passing it around at the end to kill the game off. There were other theatrics and stuff, but it never got, like, to a point of, like, monotonous kind of, tiki-taka.
Well, Bayern were up 1-0, and then they subbed on Coutinho and Perisic. It's like, okay, they're going for it. Like, they're not exactly packing it in. Dan, as a noted hater or strong disliker... Mm-hmm. Of tiki-taka, how do you feel about teams like trying so hard to play out of the back even when they're being pressed? Because I feel like PSG in particular were just really struggling against the Bayern press at times to get out of the back, and I just thought, like, you gotta have a plan B.
I mean from a actual, like, tactical, if that was my team and I wanted them to win, I think at some point you've just got to put your foot through the ball. And, like, I mean, the point of the game is to score goals, but then the thing that drives that is to put the ball in dangerous positions to be able to score from. And, you know, doing that by just blasting the ball 80 yards upfield is not an efficient way to try to get in those positions, but it does prevent the other team from turning the ball over on you 20 yards from goal, right?
Yeah.
So there's, like, which is dangerous. So from, like, that pure tactical point of view, I totally agree. Like, it made me really nervous. I didn't love it. Like, and I found myself very much supporting PSG in this game because I wanted to rub Colin's face and name our victory so badly.
It would have been an Mbappe victory anyway. That's Neymar's just along for the ride.
That's fair. But from a neutral point of view, I love it because it's exciting. Yeah. And if the ball gets turned over there, it's great.
Yeah.
And even though they're trying to play out of the back, it was never a boring, like, pass around your center backs at midfield kind of game.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because both teams were pressing, so that wasn't going to be allowed by either team anyway. But I didn't... At no point during this game was I like, oh, this is tiki-taka. It was possession-oriented, and it was play out of the back, but it wasn't like metronome kind of stuff. So I was okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a lot of actual, like, thrusting and not just, you know, politicking. But like, yeah, I don't know. I also found myself rooting for PSG to my surprise, not because I hate Neymar or like to see Colin upset, but I don't know. I just felt like that would be a fun story just to see a new team win the Champions League.
Sure.
And just the way that they were under pressure and they had a lot of bad giveaways at times in their own back. And sometimes they would break the press and create chances out of it. But I just felt like, to kind of use an American sports analogy, like you can't just run all the time. Like even if you have a good run attack in football, like you have to pass every once in a while just to keep the other team honest. And I felt like there were times where PSG just like, you've got Neymar, Mbappe, and Di Maria up there, like hit it long and see if they can chase it down every once in a while and just like get the press to back off. And I think they were pretty lucky that they didn't give up a goal on the press, I think.
Hit a big diagonal, let them run onto it and work from there. Even though that's not what they wanted to do. Like, yeah, I agree. Like at least let those guys do some work. I thought in the end it was fair. Bayern were probably a little bit better. It could have, you know, soccer's a very high variance game, but like this was very fair. It could have gone either way for sure. Neymar very upset at the end. I mean, maybe he should be, but maybe he's Brazilian and just full of emotion. Getting a lot of hugs. There were some tears there. He's a guy, being the best player in history, he's come up short quite a few times. You gotta feel for him.
Ouch.
I mean, I don't know. Let's see. He's won 5 league titles, 5 cups.
Did they win the Champions League when he was at Barca?
Yeah.
They must have.
His last year Champions there, League, I think
yep,
they won
yep,
it.
14-15, yeah. Never really won anything with Brazil, a Confederations Cup.
Yeah. I mean, I think this would
actually...
I guess he's won a gold medal, the Summer Olympics gold medal.
This would have really kind of like cemented his legacy as kind of a player, I feel, you know, that... The Barcelona, everything he does at Barcelona is just always going to be like in Messi's shadow, and everything he does at PSG domestically is like, who really cares? So this would have been like his time to shine. So I'm sure he was upset.
I mean, what if it's Mbappe who has scored that goal and they win 1-0. Is it really Neymar's time to, is it really Neymar's whatever championship?
I mean, I haven't watched a bunch of PSG this year, but Neymar did not strike me as the team or the person that team was even built around. Like,
No. He's
part of the system and he's a very good player, but like, he's not the Messi of Barcelona to, you know, Neymar to PSG. Like, Di Maria runs that game. Mbappe's running through. Thiago Silva at the back, I think, in some ways, is like a larger personality for the team than Neymar.
He's been there forever too.
I think like from a sporting standpoint you guys are right, but from like a personality standpoint, like this is still Neymar's team. Like he's the biggest,
I think that's what the narrative
the team. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how the headlines would have been written, but like I actually was surprised by how insignificant, not that he was insignificant, but like I didn't think that he was the tip of the mountain for PSG, right? He was he was another player on the field.
Yeah. And I feel like in the second half, especially, he tried to run a lot at players. kind of to the team's detriment. Like in the first half, he was more combining with Di Maria and Mbappe when they were creating chances. And I feel like, especially after PSG went down, like he tried to put the team on his back and it didn't really work out.
I mean, you can make the argument that, yeah, this is still Neymar's team or whatever, but if Mbappe had won this game and scored the game winner, he would have scored a goal in the World Cup final and won a World Cup and scored the game-winning goal in the Champions League or a goal in the Champions League final and won a Champions League at age 21. He would have done both those things. Like, I'm not sure there's a player who you could say that about, right? So I don't know how that wouldn't have been the story or whatever, but yeah, your point's taken. Like Neymar, it would have been better for Neymar, but I don't know. I think and Mbappe somehow still overlooked. Maybe like so, yeah. narratively, not like, I'm not saying defenses are overlooking him or whatever, but narratively.
This Bayern team has some key players on it that are getting older. Is this the last? I mean, it's Neuer's 34 and he's a goalkeeper, he's got whatever. 5 years left, right? But Lewandowski's 32, Boateng's 31, Thomas Müller is 30. Is this a little bit like the icing on the cake for this generation of Bayern? Those guys have defined Bayern for 10 years. Neuer's been at Bayern forever.
Yeah.
Do they have another year or two in them, or is it going to be Alphonso Davies' team moving forward?
I think you're right. Like, but I think this is always the case with Bayern, right? Like, they just cycle through these generations. I think they're less dependent on these guys than Barca are, for instance. We were saying last week about like Barca's PK Busquets era or whatever is like over and that's now a failure and they have to kind of reinvent. Bayern, at least to me, seems like they're always, quite frankly, they're always signing Dortmund's best German player and then buying a couple other guys. And every year they do a better job of, like, I don't know, predicting the future or finding their holes and fixing it as they go, kind of.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I was thinking about this game on like who on Bayern other than Neuer really stood out to me. And honestly, like no one really, like I thought Lewandowski was good, but I mean, it just felt like, you know, just your typical German machine kind of narrative stereotype, whatever.
Yeah.
Like just plug and play, kind of like what Colin was saying. And I'm sure some of these guys their form will dip just as they get older, but like, I don't know. They just steamrolled this competition, basically.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why they won't be good next year and the year after, especially because it just feels like there aren't other great European teams out there. It's not like there's a vintage Barcelona or Madrid or Man United that's like knocking on the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just feels like this team will be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Boateng, like he went out in the first half. They brought in some guy I'd literally never heard of before. I'm sure he's a great player. I just hadn't heard of him. And they kept a clean sheet. Like, that just kind of
is, cool. No know, problem.
The epitome of yeah. it.
It's like Ribery and Robben. Like, who are those guys? Like,
yep.
Do we miss those guys? No. No. No
I problem. Literally thought, on the goal celebration, I think it was like a trainer maybe, or the guy like that warms up the players on the sideline, ran onto the field to celebrate with Koeman. And he's a little bit bald in the back. And I was like, oh, Robben's there. That's cool. And I was like, oh, no, it's not. And that got me to like look up, like, wait, is Robben, what is he doing? Did he retire?
I think he did and then came out of retirement to play for like his boyhood Dutch club or something.
Love it.
But like to Colin's point also, I feel like Bayern is so smart with their player acquisition that they like, I mean, part of it's just being a big, big bully where they can like come in and get other players for cheap. But like, you know, whereas a lot of big teams will go out and spend $100 million on players every year. And not that Bayern, like they do spend a lot on players for sure. But like, you know, there was a graphic going around that like their starting 11 from the semifinals was $100 million to assemble. And Neymar was $230 million on his own or something.
Yeah.
So like they're no slouch in the transfer market.
Arjen Robben, retired from Bayern Munich 4th of July 2019. A year later, 27th of June 2020, announces his return to sign with FC Groningen, the club he started his career with, in an effort to help the team recover from COVID-19 setbacks.
What a stud.
He might flop around a little bit, but that's pretty nice.
He might flop around a little bit.
Hey.
He taught Neymar everything Neymar knows, baby. He's the OG of that shit.
I was thinking actually during the game, I was like, my bold prediction should have been Neymar gets kicked a lot, but rolls around even more.
That's not bold at all.
Yeah. The guy that came in for Boateng is Niklas Süle, 24-year-old German center back. He's got 24 Germany caps. He's not nobody. He looked one of my favorite references in soccer. He looked a bit like an ocean-going vessel, though. He wide turns, took a while to get moving forward, et cetera, et cetera.
But he's a perfect example of the kind of player that Bayern signed. He's from Hoffenheim. Like, you know, he came through at a different German club, played like 100, got like 100 caps for them, you know, whatever, got to the German national team, and then they were like, cool, you're like, come with us. You're one of the best players in Germany, so you play with us now.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, not that we have to talk about the Bundesliga and the kind of dynamics of it, but also is probably the goal for all the best German players also. They're like, oh, I'll come up through Hoffenheim, and then I'll go play at Bayern for the rest of my career.
Yeah, we get paid four times as much, I'm sure, yeah.
So one of the interesting things, and I mentioned it earlier, and we've talked about it a little bit, but a lot of the players on these teams have been around or maybe been discarded by other big clubs or deemed surplus to requirements, at least. Gnabry, obviously at Arsenal, and then went to somewhere in Germany, maybe on loan for a while.
Yeah, I think it was like Werder Bremen somewhere.
So, you know, took a couple of years to go directly from Arsenal to Bayern. He played, Collins got it. Where is it?
Werder Bremen, and then he played the next, he was signed by Werder Bremen. Then when he went to Bayern, they initially put him on loan at Hoffenheim.
Okay, there you go. Manchester United, Ander Herrera, and obviously Angel Di Maria. Real Madrid, Keylor Navas. Juve, Coleman, Kingsley Coleman was at Juve and just kind of, yeah, felt like he slid out and then he got picked up by Bayern and just reinvigorated there. Barcelona, obviously, Neymar, Coutinho, Thiago, Alcantara. Boateng at Manchester City, Alphonso Davies at the Vancouver Whitecaps. That's good run order writing. Well done, Mike.
It's a huge loss for them. They're going to look back at that and just wonder, we should have been able to hold on to him.
Why didn't we keep him?
They could have won a Champions League.
That's right. I was thinking about this a lot during the game, actually. Is there something about, I think Bayern in particular, that allows guys to kind of come good? Or is this really just the normal, like, you know, these types of players with these types of names and these types of skills, like, bounce around the very top clubs? Colin, do you have any idea if it's anything different than normal, or is there something here?
I mean, I think some of these guys are, I think it's actually like a mix of both, right? Is that like some of these guys are those superstar, like they're always going to be at top clubs and they're not going to be a one club man. So they're going to be listed for multiple top clubs like Neymar and Coutinho, like whatever. Those are $100 million moves. Di Maria, probably the same. But some of these guys, yeah, I think are, especially like Gnabry, Herrera, Coman, all stand out to me as like guys who, like you're saying, just kind of didn't get an opportunity or weren't rated by a specific manager at a massive club. And these clubs maybe have, I think the difference here for both of these clubs is that they don't have the pressure in the domestic setting as much. So like league games, you can maybe afford to, you know, let a player take their time to find their feet. Right. So I think the good example we've seen in England of the opposite of this, right, is Chelsea. Chelsea wants to win the league every year. They haven't been that good in the past at that in the past 5 years or something. I won a league one of those years, actually, but they've had a lot of disappointing years. And players like Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne have both failed to break into that team because, you know, if they have a couple bad games in the league, they can't afford to run those players out and see if they can adapt. And they've moved on and obviously are two of the probably the five best players in the world right now or something like that. So at a place like Bayern or PSG, like, you can afford to be like, look, this player's got potential even though they're 23. And if they don't come good in the first 10 games, we don't need to get rid of them. We don't need to move them on. We can just put them on loan to Hoffenheim, or we can just suck it up and keep paying them because we're a super club and hopefully they'll come good. Like, you can kind of take those risks, I think. Whereas, maybe a City or a Chelsea super club is a little bit more like, if you failed at your last place, we probably don't want you. We're going to pay a little more for somebody who didn't fail at their last place.
I think also, like, Bayern in particular, I mean, some of these players we mentioned play for PSG, but Bayern in particular are in this weird situation where they're a huge club, but they're not that super rich. You know, they don't have, at least as far as I know, like a multi-billion dollar individual or country backing them. So, like, they might have to be a little bit more creative about, you know, oh, you know, Kingsley Coman didn't quite make it at Juve, but he's on huge wages. Like, how many other clubs can he go to, right? Like, there's only a handful of clubs that can probably pay, you know, 300,000 a week or whatever he's on, and Bayern's one of them, but they can come in and get him for like a cheap transfer because, you know, Juve doesn't want him anymore.
Because Juve is desperate to get him off the wage books.
Yeah. He's a perfect example because they signed him first on a 2-year loan with a fee of $7 million to be paid in two installments with an option to buy for an extra 21, blah, 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 blah. That's exactly the situation, right? It's like,
We'll trade wages for transfer fees and we've got 2 years to figure out if we like him.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Coutinho now. And like, I just feel like Bayern, they, in some ways, like, they have this gravitational pull domestically where, like, we kind of talk about, they just suck up any good German player that plays on another team. But then they also can kind of finagle their way into like a sort of cast aside player at another big club. And then like, allow them to sort of, you know, reinvent themselves.
James Rodriguez, anyone? James Rodriguez? It sounds exactly like James.
Yep, totally.
For a while, I feel like Juve was really doing this too. Like, you know, they picked up Pirlo, right, for a while. They picked up...
Sami Khedira, I remember they picked up from Real Madrid.
Yeah, exactly.
They had a bunch of similar kind of guys of like, you know, it didn't seem like those guys were top class, but then they still won, you know, 5, 10, 15 Serie A titles in a row or whatever it is.
And we're going to talk about, I mean, we're not going to talk about, because we don't usually talk about this competition, but Europa League, the Inter made the final in that, and they're absolutely this team, right? Right now, they have like Ashley Young on the roster, Christian Eriksen, obviously their strikers are Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez. Yeah. So like, absolutely guys who, I mean... Not all of them are, I would say, like, too old, like, past their peak or something like that. Like, you may put some of these guys in that category. But, like, Eriksen and Lukaku are 28 and 27. They're absolutely at their peak. But they're just guys who, didn't find the right transfer situation for them in a lot of ways. And so Inter was like, yeah, we'll take you. We'll make you fit.
Yep.
I like it. I like it a lot. I think that's a smart tactic. Is like a couple of years of tough results doesn't make you a bad player. That could very much be circumstance, right? Yeah. So
class is permanent.
And a little try before you buy in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Which is always nice.
That's right. I think it leaves the manager with a tough job. I think in a lot of these situations it's like kind of like I'm saying with Inter, it's like player becomes available from Manchester United and they clearly have talent, but I don't know. Were you setting up your team to have a striker like Lukaku or were you not? Oh, I don't know. But if we end up with Lukaku, like we're going to play him now, how are we going to, what do we need to do differently or whatever? So How can you play Lukaku and Sanchez in the same team? How can you play Lukaku, Sanchez, and what's the other guy? Martinez, Lautaro Martinez or whatever. Mm-hmm. How can you play all those guys? It's like you get these problems, but it's just it's very opportunistic. But yeah, all credit to both these teams for making it work.
Yeah. So there you go, Bayern, PSG. No complaints. I actually really like this final because in the end it was two heavyweights, two teams that I'm personally just like fine with winning. So it was there was no negative outcome on the table really in terms of my just like personal preference. But it turned out, I mean, we came into this it's not post-COVID, but like concurrent with COVID, this single elimination tournament, all the teams in the same place. It felt very World Cup almost, mm-hmm. in terms of the way the games were played, and they were on this kind of 4 or 5 day cadence. Single elimination tournament. We thought there'd be a lot of, or at least the potential for upsets. We didn't really see that. Mike, do you like this format more than the typical? Do you wish there had been more upsets? Were you surprised there weren't more? I mean,
yeah, I was in some ways surprised. I mean, if you kind of look at, Bayern was definitely like the favorite going into this tournament. They've just been stomping everybody. And then once they beat Barcelona, it was like, okay, now they're definitely the favorites. But yeah, I was definitely a little bummed out that we did get like the heavyweight final, even though it ended up being fun. You know, this would have been a great year to have Atalanta make it to a final. And like, that would have been a very cool story. But I don't really know if you can do this going forward, unless you're going to say, all right, we're just going to play all these games at neutral venues, which could be fun, but feel like you'd lose a lot of the spirit of the Champions League if you have all your knockout games at neutral venues.
No more Champions League midnights under the floodlights. Not midweeks under the floodlights.
Well, I mean, you could still do midweek, but it's like if you're having, you know, PSG play Bayern in a round of 16 game and the game is in, I don't know, Rome or whatever, it's like just a very different feel, even if the stadium's full of fans, you know, than kind of what we're used to. But I'm all for like trying to find a way to make it, you know, single elimination knockout. Let's brainstorm.
I mean, it only takes a couple of weeks. If you do quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, single elimination, it frees up a lot of the fixture congestion that you get at the end of the year for these big clubs. If you just do this at the end of the season every year, I get what you're saying about the, you know, losing out on the home field and the fans don't get it then. But it's kind of sweet. And maybe in the end, butts and seats isn't what drives the economic model anymore, right? It's TV viewership and the international crowd and whatever. So
let's make it happen. Really,
yeah, I'm not against it.
Champions League is back.
Colin, thoughts about the postseason tournament, Champions League as the crown jewel of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I do like it in theory, but the problem is less games, less money, less TV revenue. You go single elimination. So what I was thinking is, and we also said, you know, it's kind of like the first time we did it here, we were hoping, and you know, we had it in our minds probably as Americans, that it was going to be a little bit more March Madness and we were going to get some madness. We didn't maybe get that madness. So I'm kind of thinking if we just run it back, like just do it twice. If you do it once and a super club wins, just do it again. That doesn't count. The first one doesn't count. And you just do it again. That's more money. Just play it until Atalanta wins.
Play the tournament over and over until the lowest seed wins.
Just play it again and be like, nah, Bayern, PSG, if a team who's already won a Champions League, Bayern, Barca, whatever, they got to like prove it. They got to win it twice. They got to win the whole tournament twice.
I like the idea of having two brackets with the same teams going concurrently, but the matchups are different. So in one bracket, you know, Bayern has a really tough road to the final, but then in the other, they have a really easy road. And they're played like a week apart, and it just becomes incredibly confusing, but a lot of fun.
And then, yeah, and like in the semifinals, like Barca is in two semifinals, and Barca fans are like, oh, this is going to be brilliant. Like, we're going to win both of them and be the first team ever to not have to play a final, blah, 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 yeah. blah. Yeah. And then they lose them both, and it's just fucking shambolic, and they fire everyone. Oh, man. It's going to be...
Yeah, there's a lot of gamesmanship. Like, all right, in this final, in this bracket, you know, Barcelona has to play Bayern. They're going to throw that game and hope that, you know, something happens on that side of the bracket. Really focus on the left side of the bracket. I think there's something here.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Maybe one of the brackets isn't actually soccer, but it's like another sport too. We could do foosball on the other side of the bracket.
Doesn't have to be a sport. Could be freestyle battles.
Could be freestyle battles. As always, we're always down to settle things with freestyle.
Blazeball.
Yeah, blazeball. puns, whatever you want.
Oh, I love a pun battle. All right, guys. I don't know. What else happened in soccer this week? The Europa League, Colin kind of mentioned it. Inter lost to Sevilla?
Yeah.
That's how much I followed that question mark on the winners of the Europa League.
I mean, when in doubt, Sevilla wins, right?
Yeah, I agree.
That's how that tournament works.
Yep, I agree.
Anything interesting there? Thoughts on that?
I was only, you know, involved on an ancillary level because of people who didn't make this podcast, but sometimes podcast with us, two of them, gambling, you know, lots of different parts of this game. So I think that Lukaku scoring first was good for that, but the outcome didn't work out for people who didn't believe Sevilla was going to win a Europa League final, which, again, yeah, like you
Shame
say,
on those people.
Come on, have you been paying attention? Do you have Wikipedia? I mean, come on.
I mean, the winning goal was a bicycle kick that deflected in off Lukaku for technically an own goal, but
yeah.
it was a pretty good way to win a cup final.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how little I paid attention. I didn't even know that. I haven't seen the highlights. And here I am hosting a soccer podcast. You're welcome, world. You are welcome.
Suck it, world. the other thing that's new, I mean, the other thing in my mind about soccer right now is that the problem with my theory about we should just, you know, play another bracket of Champions League is that we're going to have another season coming up like any time now, right?
Real quick.
I think the French League already started.
Yeah, the Premier League schedules are out. Everton had their first preseason game yesterday. Looked like shit, obviously, because we're shit. But, you know, whatever. Listeners, I mean, still please send in your bets where, you know, you bet that your team will finish above Everton or something. But, you know.
I think in a normal world, this weekend would be game week 2.
Yeah, maybe 1 or 2, yeah.
Maybe 1?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's coming quick. Yeah. It's coming quick. They don't want to, like, push back too far here and get themselves off schedule. So
here we go.
And
actually, that really makes me wonder about what, like, if Everton looks terrible, like, why? It's only 3 weeks since their last game.
Because, like, we looked bad before. That's why we looked bad.
Oh,
now.
So it just carries over. I see. Like, is there a preseason?
We just got Hummel kits. That's the whole difference. We went from Umbro to Hummel kits, and they were still bad.
Oh, that didn't change it?
No.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. It'll be interesting. I guess all the players got a huge break from March till June. So that was their offseason.
Yeah, right. So we'll see. Yeah, it'll be a weird one. Obviously, the storyline for that one for me is Marcelo Bielsa returning to the Premier League. Or not returning to the Premier League. Coming to the Premier League first time ever, obviously. But that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Mike
it's
looks...
Be an all Bielsa podcast for the next at least 12 months.
I mean,
can't wait for Colin to just wax poetic about, you know, Bielsa telling his left back to stand 3 meters to the left and how that's just totally, you know, disrupting the opposition.
If U.S. soccer wasn't so corrupt, we could have had that every week for the past 2 years or something like that if we had hired Marcelo Bielsa when we fired, I don't know, Klinsmann or Arena. But it's not to be. We had to hire someone whose first English is their first language, because that is so important. Stupid.
I mean, do we really want to do another half an hour? Are we getting into that?
Sorry. Got me worked out. Yeah, I shouldn't start talking about U.S. soccer when we're like right on the edge of time here. Sorry.
Although, in Klinsmann-related news, Jonathan Klinsmann signs with the L.A. Galaxy this week. mere weeks after I bring him up on the pod.
Yeah, yeah.
Huge move for him.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was lovely.
Who's the Galaxy's starting keeper? Is Klinsmann going to get time?
He didn't start in their game yesterday or 2 days ago, but I don't know. I don't know if he's in contention. I would imagine. I mean, he's moving there. He's still like 21 or 22, so at least he thinks he's good enough to start there. I'd imagine, but I don't know.
David Bingham.
David Bingham. Yeah.
Yeah. Long time.
Some like MLS journeyman. Legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. But Jonathan Klinsmann, like, where has he actually played?
Nowhere.
He's like literally played nowhere. So, you know, is he really
Klinsmann
in contention?
Watch. It's on.
It's on. It is on.
We're going to have a new part of the podcast that's just, has Klinsmann played this week?
Thumbs up, thumbs down. It's not even going to be audio. It's just going to be video. Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yep. Love it.
All right, boys. Anything else? Alrighty then. I think that's it.
Great stuff.
All right.
Thanks,
Stay
Cliff.
Stay safe. Thanks, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
Bye.
It's a new day.
It's a new day.
It's a new dawn.
It's a new dawn. Can you see my whole body? Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Can you see my whole body?
Okay.
I hope she has a magnificent day. There we go.
I didn't watch this game. I didn't get a chance to watch this whole game. Sorry.
The ball boy. Dan, as a noted strong disliker.
Strong disliker.
Prove it. I had the same thought about... No. Although... Yeah.
Yeah, I was in some ways surprised. I mean...
Because we looked bad before. That's why we look bad now. Stupid.